This is part two of our running back rankings, our top 24 to 26 or so running backs. Yesterday, we broke down our top 12 running backs in depth. Today, we're going to be going through the remainder of our top 24 to 26 guys, just given the tier breaks there. And we're going to go through all the cases for them. Most of the guys we're going to talk about in today's video are more so your like third to seventh round picks. The guys we talked about in yesterday's video, all going inside of the top two rounds of ADP. Another reminder for the season pass, it is now live. Usually it came out in August last year. You can get it in June now. Get extra 2 months basically for the same price it was last year. That'll be linked down below in the pinned comment. But Danny, let's talk about the one shift that did happen from yesterday's video is that Jeremiah Love, Kenneth Walker, and Derrick Henry all kind of jumped up a tier based on us moving Jeremiah Love within the tier of Kenneth Walker and Derrick Henry. So he kicks off this video, of course, a rookie running back, so we don't have any previous data on him, no NFL, you know, stuff to talk about. Third overall pick to the Arizona Cardinals. They also signed Tyler Allgeier. As of today, they still have James Conner and Trey Benson on the roster, but I'd imagine one or both of those guys gets moved or cut or something. What do you think of Jeremiah Love, and why do you, you're a little bit higher on him than I am. Why do you think he kind of belongs in this conversation?
Honestly, mostly just a talent play. Like, obviously, the, you know, bear case, the negative case against him would be, well, Austin Jeanty, from an efficiency perspective, struggled with the Raiders last year. But like I outlined for why I'm so pro Jeanty this year, I just think the Raiders situation was a one of one. Like, Pete Carroll, that tenure didn't work out well. Obviously, the Nepo baby on the offensive line for the Raiders. I do think if Austin Jeanty was in a better situation, he would have had a better year in totality. And when we look at the situation for Arizona, like, you got a solid offensive line. You talk about all those receiving weapons that they have, Trey McBride, Marvin Harrison, Michael Wilson, at least providing stability to the offense. And I am, you know, I'm not going to say I'm bullish on Mike LaFleur, but at the same time, I at least trust Mike LaFleur a lot more than I had with the Raiders last year. So realistically, you're getting a generational prospect. We talked about just how high of an elite receiving ceiling he has as well. I mean, obviously in Notre Dame, they didn't get a ton of receiving volume as a whole. I mean, we were talking about, why didn't Eli Raritan produce more? Why didn't Malachi Fields produce more? They had NFL players across that offense, and there just wasn't really a ton of production in the passing game. I do think Jeremiah Love, everything goes right, we could be talking about a 225 carry, 75 plus target back even this year.
Yeah, I think the challenging thing for Jeremiah Love is we've seen prospects of his caliber, like Bijan Robinson and Ashton Jeanty, fail to finish as RB1s their rookie season in points per game. So we got to ask ourselves, hey, is Jeremiah Love going to do that on a team that is currently projected for 4.5 wins, on a team that has a first-year head coach in Mike LaFleur? Their offensive coordinator is Nathaniel Hackett, which nobody wants to hear the name of. But in Nathaniel Hackett's defense, he did help Breece Hall, who's a very comparable player to Jeremiah Love, reach a top five, top six scoring season. So the challenging thing for me on Jeremiah Love is there's concerns pretty much everywhere. If there was one concern, like if it was just Allgeier I was concerned about, or just whatever I was concerned about, then I wouldn't be as skeptical about taking him in the second round. I think for me, Jeremiah Love is a player that I need to get in round three. I need to get him at the 301, 302, 303, 304, because at that point, then you have two anchors to build your team around and you can draft accordingly after that. You can draft a Tony Pollard later in your draft. You can draft, you know, a receiver like a Jacoby Myers or somebody who's going to get off to a better start, because I do tend to believe weeks 1 to 8, weeks 1 to 10, he'll be a 12, 13 point per game running back. And then maybe weeks 10 to 17, he's a 16, 17, 18 point per game running back. There is going to be some weathering of the storm, I think, with Jeremiah Love, whether it's because of the team not being good or Jeremiah Love, who's barely 21 years old, adjusting to the NFL and all those factors involved. But like you said, 83 targets in my projections, 15.72 PPR points per game over the season in my projections, an offensive line that is currently ranked 15th by ESPN. While Jacoby Brissett is the starter, because that's the other kind of minor concern I have, is that Carson Beck could get in there at some point. What does the offense look like? How good are they performing? Are they out of it? They have the hardest schedule in football. They play the Seahawks, Rams, and 49ers fronts, which are some of the best run-blocking fronts in the league, 6 times this year. Like, it's not a good situation for Love. You're kind of just betting on the talent, the ability of the player beating out all of those factors, and also the receiving stuff and the capital and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's ultimately what it really comes down to for me. Generational type of running back prospect, third overall pick. We do have the quotes as well from Mike LaFleur basically saying, when Steph Curry gets hot, you're not taking him off the field. You're not subbing him out. So I do feel like if Jeremiah Love shows, okay, this is why he was the third overall pick, this is why he was a guy that was talked about as potentially the best player in his overall class, if he goes out there and really starts hot, we could be talking about a guy who does it across the year. But I do think it's more likely, like you said, where maybe he starts slow, Allgeier's a professional back, maybe the team's not doing well. if you're in a league where you know, okay, these guys are overreacting and I can trade on the low for Jeremiah Love week five, week six, if you know inherently that can happen, be my guest. Don't draft Jeremiah Love in your draft. If you're in a league with more sharper people, they're like, okay, well, I drafted a rookie running back. The thesis was always he was going to be more of a week seven to week 17 play. If that's kind of the philosophy, the thought process in your league, I would still be willing to get aggressive on Jeremiah Love, because ultimately, when it comes to the fantasy football playoffs and you need to pick a running back, I think he's one of the five or six that would be the first off the board at that point.
Yeah, very possible that by week 13, he's like my RB5, RB6 in my running back tier list that week. He's the type of guy that I could see based on types of redraft formats, full PPR, half PPR standard, and also best ball mania where all the money's at the top, and versus a standard, you know, PPR redraft league where everybody's just competing for a playoff spot. If you're in a league with a bunch of pumpkins and you know you're going to make the playoffs, like Jeremiah Love is the type of player I'd be more willing to take in that format. And same goes for best ball mania where all the money is up top and you have an opportunity to get a high scoring running back at a discount at that point in time. But he is a challenging evaluation just because of how bad the Arizona Cardinals truly are. Like, he would have been better off going to the Tennessee Titans, most likely. He definitely would have been better off going to, you know, a team like Washington. The Washington Commanders at number 7 overall. Like, he would have been better off in those situations. But alas, he was the third pick to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, if he went to Washington, we wouldn't have to pretend that, like, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt or Rashad White or Ka'Tron Allen are going to be the league winner this year. Like, we could just say, oh yeah, Jeremiah Love would be a top three back.
Yeah, and he'd probably be 108, 109 in redraft, I'd imagine, if he was on the Commanders. He'd probably be somewhere in that territory. Let's get into the next tier of guys, and I would say this is how I would describe this tier. If you need 15 points per game, these are your guys. These are your guys. If you don't want to lose your fantasy league, you want to get a good set it and forget it RB2 for your roster, most likely, or maybe RB1 if you went receiver at the start of the draft or something, or you grab receiver and Brock Bowers at the start of your draft. These are the guys.
Hey, Corey, you know what they say, since we were young, since we first came into the industry, you can't win your draft in the first three rounds, but you can't lose it. Like, if that's your philosophy, if that's your cup of tea and you drafted, let's just say, I don't know, you're more of a secure guy, you like Jonathan Taylor more than us, and you drafted Jonathan Taylor, you draft an elite wide receiver, you wrap around on the mid to late third, and you grab a Breece Hall, a Javonte Williams, a Kyren Williams, and Travis Etienne, who I guess you'll talk about you don't have in this tier, but I am a lot more bullish on than you.
Yeah, we'll talk about our tier discrepancies. Breece Hall is the head of this tier for us, and I guess of the four guys in this tier has shown that 17 point per game upside ceiling. And Kyron's shown it as well, but given Corum's addition to the backfield recently, we maybe don't expect 2023 Kyren Williams at this point in time. Breece Hall, the thing that gets me excited is he just got paid. He's got a huge contract. Breece Hall at points in his career has flashed 95 target upside, and he no longer has, you know, a mobile quarterback duo of Justin Fields and Tyrod Taylor. You have the upright statuesque Geno Smith, who fed rookie year Ashton Jeanty 73 targets last season, even despite Jeanty not really playing on all three downs, long down and distance and that kind of thing. So for me with Breece Hall, the only real question I have is, this guy has never scored more than 5 rushing touchdowns in a season. Can you possibly get more than 15 to 17 points per game out of a player who probably won't find the end zone double digit times given how bad his team is?
To me, he's one of the safest picks on the board. And it's crazy for me to say that, because yes, we've been burned by the Jets before. We've been, oh, maybe the Jets are better than people think, and it hasn't really worked out for us. So yeah, I'm willing to get burned again here with Breece Hall. You're getting a guy that you know is going to be at 15 to 17 and a half points per game while projecting him for less than 8 touchdowns. What if the Jets are better than people think? What if Geno Smith, again, I'm not going to say he's going to play like he was in Seattle, but what if it's somewhere between the Raiders last year versus where he was in Seattle? Maybe he's the 23rd best starting quarterback in the league next year. On top of that, we believe in the receiving weapons. Apparently, A.D. Mitchell's looked good in camp. You got Omar Cooper, you got Garrett Wilson, you got Kenyon Sadiq. Like, all of a sudden, you look at the ecosystem of the Jets on top of what was a very much improved offensive line, 2 young cornerstones at tackle. You just re-signed Joel Tippmann to, what, $20 million per year?
Maybe you run a lot of those. That's good for Breece Hall.
Like, I'm looking at the infrastructure here, and it's a guy who's been at 15 to 18 points per game off the back of no touchdowns. What if we do have a 12 touchdown from scrimmage here? What if we do see, oh, they just paid him this offseason, and he takes that next step? I also do think there is a slight concern, because everything we're hearing from Aaron Glenn is like, oh, there's going to be a 3-headed committee, and this is our 3-headed monster. We got Braylon Allen, we got Isaiah Davis, we got Breece Hall. But you got your Thunder, your Lightning, and your Storm, or whatever. That's something that Aaron Glenn would probably point out. The thunder, lightning, and storm or some bullshit.
Yeah, is that what Isaiah Davis is?
I don't know. Like, he's kind of like both. Like, he can play in space, but also he's got the size to run between tackles. Like, he might just very well be the storm.
Yeah, like, this situation to me is just, I feel like I'm actually the lowest on Breece Hall, which is really weird because I'm always super high on Breece Hall. It feels like every single year. I just feel cozy about him. I think, like, you got 18.2 opportunities per game out of this player last year. Yes, Braylon Allen was injured. Yes, they're talking about committee stuff, but the Jets were an abject train wreck. They had mobile quarterbacks who didn't feed Breece Hall in the passing game. Breece now with a contract. He seems in good spirits. He seems like he's committed to the team. It seems like they're building something. I kind of believe that he's going to return on ADP. Do I think he's going to crush and smash? No, because I don't believe in Geno Smith, and I don't think Cade Klubnik's going to, you know, revitalize the offense once he gets in there either. So I tend to think that the Jets will be bad again, and drafting accordingly means that, yeah, I can't spend more than like a early to mid third round pick on the guy.
I'm still at around that range as well. I believe he's my 27th ranked player. While I am a little bit more bullish on maybe what the offense presents, I'm still going to say, like, they're probably going to be in the 18 to 25 range of offenses. Like, I don't think, oh my
God,
the Jets.
Optimistic projection, in my opinion.
But that's what I mean. Like, even though I'm optimistic, like, I don't think that's outlandish to say. I'm not going out there and saying, oh yeah, this is the sneaky top 10 to 12 offense that you need. Like, I'm not saying that. But at the same time, if they're 18 to 25 range, they're about a below average offense as opposed to a complete train wreck. Who's to say the touchdown equity isn't there for Breece this year?
Yeah, so let's talk about the two, I don't know, double condom running backs, I guess I'd call them here. Like, Javonte Williams last season, breakout season, obviously best season of his career, 15.18 points per game. He was the RB12 in points per game that season. The concern that I have for Javonte Williams, because it's pretty easy to check boxes with him. He's on the Cowboys. Cowboys project as a good team, probably a top 10 offense lock as they've been in Dak Prescott's entire tenure as long as he's stayed healthy. You have Lamb, Pickens on the outside, Ferguson. Like, there's weapons to move the ball. There's opportunities for Javonte Williams to find the end zone, which he did 13 times last season. So he had a lot of touchdown equity in that offense. The question I have for Javonte Williams is, okay, this is a one-year wonder. Technically, like, I know he's always been considered a good running back and we've always assumed he was a great running back, but from a raw fantasy point per game output, this is only the second top 24 finish of his career. And the first was, you know, his rookie season when he was a different guy with different knees. So for me, I look at Javonte Williams as, okay, any progression in Malik Davis, in Jaden Blue, any other offseason additions they might make before the season starts, maybe they're the Trey Benson team or they're the James Conner team or whatever. That will make me nervous about Javonte Williams, because down the stretch, weeks 1 to 8, this guy was nails, man. He was looking like a legit top 6 guy rest of season. And then he kind of tapered off a little bit. He had only one top 15 finish the rest of the season from week 9 to 17. Now, part of that is the Cowboys started to not play as well on offense and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I just worry about Javonte Williams, the player. Is he a good enough running back to command, you know, his 70% opportunity share the entire year if Jaden Blue and Malik Davis and some of these other guys are able to contribute in other ways?
So I think those are absolutely valid concerns and why I don't think he's a complete smash where he goes. But also, I will point out there is a little bit more context in the Cowboys season. And we kind of talked about this with CeeDee Lamb off camera, but the Cowboys got eliminated week 15 against the Vikings. And they really, I don't want to say like they eased off the gas pedal in the last couple of weeks, but all I'll say is against the Chargers, against Washington, you could tell the Cowboys, once they are eliminated, weren't really fully into it. In that week 1 to 15 stretch, you're still getting 16.1 points per game, a guy that was on pace for the RB8 in fantasy, and that was on the back of 4.9 yards per carry and 80 rushing yards per game. So I do think, with the division being so close, we'll talk about it more in depth when we get to the receiver video, because we do have a little bit of stuff to go through when it comes to CeeDee Lamb. But when we look at the division right now, the win totals are all close. The Eagles, 10.5. The Cowboys, 9.5. The two bottom teams in the division, 7.5. So even if you're, you know, more pessimistic on the Cowboys winning the division, again, I think they're going to win the division, but if you think it's going to be Eagles, go for it. I also do think week 16 and 17, every team in that division is going to have something to play for.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why it's too hard to it's hard to get too high or too low on Javonte Williams for every reason we just outlined. Yeah. Because you can get too high on Javonte Williams by just looking at checking boxes. Because if you're just like, good running back, past RB1, good offense, top, you know, 10 plus touchdown upside. It's very easy to get high on Javonte Williams and think he's the best player on the board where he goes at the 3-4 turn. And I tend to think he's actually one of the better players on the board where he goes at the 3-4 turn. Like, I would much rather draft Javonte Williams than Teteroa McMillan, for example, because I just think in raw fantasy points per game and the fact that he plays a more scarce position, like, there's guys in round 7, 8, 9, and 10 that could produce similar point per game output to Teteroa McMillan if he has a 13, 14 fantasy point per game season. I don't think you're going to find running backs in that territory of the draft producing 15 plus points per game like Javonte Williams is pretty much guaranteed to produce as long as he holds this job. I'm going to keep re-emphasizing the fact that before this season, Javonte Williams was not thought of as a workhorse running back who could command a full workload and be an RB1 in fantasy. At least he had never proven it. At times we'd thought that, but we had never seen it until last year.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always going to be concern for a guy that's had multiple season-ending injuries. Like, what if he got lucky and he stayed healthy this year and this year he got hurt again? Like, obviously that's still going to be...
He hasn't had multiple season-ending injuries, for what it's worth. He actually has been relatively durable playing 16, 17, 16, and 17 games outside of his torn ACL 2022 season. Yeah.
I guess what I would say is even if he was playing the games, like, he looked like he was playing as somebody who was hurt. This year looked by far in terms of the burst, in terms of the explosiveness, the lateral ability, like, he finally looked healthy again. And I guess my question is, this is still a guy. Yeah, he's only 26.1 years old, but he does have 5 years under his belt. He finally stayed healthy, finally had the big year. What if it kind of, you know, regresses to the mean? What if it's a guy that becomes more of a three-man committee? What if Malik Davis gets some consequential touches? What if Jaden Blue becomes more of a space back? Like, I understand what you mean, where he was the unquestioned number one, 69% of the snaps last year. What if that's more so in the 58 to 63% range?
Yeah, and like Pat Corain dubbed guys like this potentially silent killers. Like, this is a player that you would put in your lineup every single week because he's getting volume and it keeps you out of the waiver wire running back rankings. It keeps you out of starting that upside rookie on your bench or whatever. Like, that's the fear with Javonte Williams, is that you draft him RB, whatever he's going off the board, RB 13, 14, 15 off the board, and you get the RB 23 in points per game and he's a silent killer. That's possible. Yeah. Very possible, in my opinion.
The upside would be like, oh, if he hits, he could be like Josh Jacobs. Like, that that would be the upside here. But
which is what he was last year, essentially. Yeah. RB 8 in points per game, like you said, when the Cowboys were in it, which was 1.5 points less than what Josh Jacobs was producing at 17.6, and he was at 16.1. Yeah. Ironically, also at 16.1 points per game in that stretch was Kyren Williams.
Yeah.
And there's a reason these guys are very close in rankings for both of us. I actually do prefer Kyren Williams to Javonte Williams. And the simple reason why is that I have 3 seasons of Kyren Williams being an RB1 in fantasy. Totally it's reasonable. Just a sample size thing for me. I actually don't think talent-wise they're all that far off. I just know for a fact how good Kyren Williams is because I've seen it for 3 years.
So the spoiler alert, that's going to be a common theme once we talk about like the RB17 on in this video, where it's like you got the proven guys, but you also got the guys that have the ceiling to completely smash that range. Obviously, we'll talk about that probably within the next 5 minutes.
It's good that we're doing a combined rankings video because you won't get too high or too low on really anybody because I'm going with devils I know and Danny's going with, you know, more upside swing. So I think the balance of our two rankings together, which is a good thing, you can get our two rankings combined on the site like you can. It's a good balance of what the running back rankings maybe should look like.
For sure. The reason why I do have Javonte higher again, it's a really close spread. Like, if we go through, where do I have Kyren ranked on here?
You have him at 38, according to this. I'm at 26. I'm the highest on the site on Kyren Williams.
So I had Javonte at 29. He's kind of the start of the tier and Kyren was the end of it. The only real concern here is you mentioned backfield competition. I am far more worried about Blake Corum taking a significant dent than I am the Cowboys backups, but if you want to just say, hey, I think both have relatively similar concerns in their backfield, except Kyren's done it before. Like, I don't, how do I explain this? I disagree, but I don't hate the aspect of just preferring the known quantity.
Yeah, I agree with you that Blake Corum is a bigger threat to the backfield than anything in the Cowboys backfield, but I think it's offset by A, I think the Rams are the best offense in the league, and B, Kyren Williams, like the quickest way to lose your workload is to not be a great running back anymore. Not necessarily the guy behind you being a good running back. I think guys who lose their workload, like Chuba Hubbard's a good example last year, it's because you're not playing well. And I think it's more likely Javonte would not play well than Kyren.
Fair. I would just also point out the fact that like we already kind of saw it as a 45 to 50 split for Corum last year. Like Corum was really freaking good. I'm more so just think like the coaching staff might see year three, he's ready to take the step. Like, I would put the range of outcomes that Kyren's the starting running back, probably, you know, a 70-30, 80-20 type of split. Like, I would still favor Kyren, But I think it's far more likely that Blake Corum could run in an opportunity. Say Kyron missed two games, Corum came in, and he wrestled the starting job, as opposed to Malik Davis or Jaden Blue doing it for Javonte.
That's my opinion. On the season, Kyron had a 70% snap share. And even if we look at, like, let's say week 12 on.
Backscaled.
Yeah, let's say week 12 on, when, you know, Corum was a bigger part of the backfield, we're still talking about the RB13 over that span. So even if you, and Kyron didn't score a lot of touchdowns in that stretch either. So there's a good chance to me that it's, like you said, what, a 70-80% chance it's Kyron Williams as the starting running back. I think it's like a 99.9% chance that as long as Kyron is healthy, he's the starting running back.
So that would be our difference. At the end of the day, though, if you are picking at the 1-2 turn, let's just say you go CeeDee Lamb plus Chase Brown or something like that. You can secure one of the starting running backs for a team right now in Vegas projections that is ranked as a top four offense. It's probably a good pick. The Rams right now, number one ranked projected offense in Vegas, 26.84. Cowboys at 25.68, ranking at fourth. Two teams between them, the Bills and the Lions.
Yeah, and if you go back over the last five calendar seasons of fantasy football running back rankings and find the guys who had guys behind them in the backfield who were good players, but the guy that we're talking about as the main guy is in one of the best offenses in the league, I don't think you're going to find a lot of misses in that territory. I think the reason players miss is usually talent issues, and I don't really have any question about Kyron.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally reasonable. I have him in this range as well, 3-4 turn, late third. Can get there. If you're in a really running back heavy league, I can even push both these guys up to the mid third.
Yeah, agreed. I actually would be fine taking either of them at the 2-3 turn, to be honest with you. I think I have like Kyron for sure ranked in that territory, but even Javonte, if you're in a running back heavy league with premiums or whatever. This is a completely divisive player for the two of us. At 20 in my 2026 rankings, I am by far the lowest on the site on him. So yeah. I will let you make the pro case for ETN, and then I'll make the con case for him.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's been a proven RB1 in the past. He gets the bag to the Saints this offseason. The Saints realistically are going to be one of the top three teams in terms of projected pace on offense this year. You're going to point out some of the concerns in terms of the overall points per game.
I'll get to that. You get to the pros.
Basically what I was trying to say is even if they're only a middle projected points per game offense, I think the pace more so makes them a top 10 fantasy-friendly environment. I know what Kellen Moore can operate on offense. Ultimately, I do think bringing in Jordan Tyson, having Chris Olave, having Juwan Johnson opens up the outside. And I do think the Saints, realistically last year, Kamara wasn't playing like himself. Devin Neal couldn't really handle a full three-down workload. I do think they were looking for a true lead back, and Travis Etienne was the guy that was the best on the market for him. So realistically, when I get to this range, Etienne, he's got 50-plus target upside. He's got 225-plus carry upside. And if the Saints are one of the most emerging offenses because Tyler Shuck takes that next step, we could be talking about a guy who punches in 12 to 15 touchdowns.
Yeah, I got the holy trinity of concern for Travis Etienne. I have concerns with his receiving workload, which last year was 52 targets, which is not a huge, outrageous projection for him to have this year. But just yesterday, the Saints' Twitter account is featuring Alvin Kamara in like a photo shoot. I don't think he's going anywhere, and I think where he factors in is going to be on third down. He's going to have the pass protection snaps. He's going to have the long down and distance snaps. So I do think Etienne is going to be more of an in-between-the-tackles guy than he is a three-down guy, which is more so what he was in Jacksonville last year. So that's concern number one. Number two, we are 2 years removed from Travis Etienne being one of the biggest busts in fantasy football. So the talent is good. It's generally proven over the course of his college and NFL career. He's been a good running back. We all kind of know that. But he's live to lay a stinker when we all buy back into him. I think this is my point there. And then, like you said, number three, my concern with the Saints offense is, okay, they were 28th in scoring last year. Even with Tyler Shuck playing as well as he did down the stretch, even with the 11th most passing yards in the league, even with the 13th most plays run. So the pace, the offensive environment can be there, but they might not be scoring a lot. So I do kind of worry about Travis Etienne's goal line equity because Kamara is good at that too. Of course, literally one of the best goal line backs of the last decade. And also the receiving equity. I just think there's a lot of moving parts here, and I feel more comfortable with some of the workloads and some of the talent upside plays later on. But I think as high as people want to rank him, let's say RB 16 to 18 or whatever, where we have him here, I think that's reasonable. If you want to take him this high, I think that's reasonable. But he is my RB 24. Like, I have him way lower than a lot of people do.
I will say, I think it's pretty disingenuous just taking the Saints total splits last year, knowing just how bad the offense looked when Spencer Rattler was starting.
I just tend to think that Shuck took the league by surprise a little bit. And I think
you're quoting, you're quoting Spencer Rattler splits, though. Like, when Shuck took over, objectively speaking, they were so much better of an offense. Okay, that was the whole storyline of the NFL down the last 8 weeks. Oh, my God. Tyler Shuck, Saints offense. Like, we were talking about midway through the year, are the Saints going to be picking Fernando Mendoza?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Like, here's my thing, though. Who is the last quarterback to have a nice second season? I think when the league catches up to you a little bit and you don't have those like elite tools, we saw CJ Stroud take a step back. We saw Jaden Daniels take a step back. We've seen other quarterbacks have good rookie seasons. And then the league catches up to you a little bit. They get some tape on you. I don't personally think Tyler Shuck does anything at a particularly elite level. I think he's a good passer. I think he's got good mobility. I think he's accurate generally, but I think that the Saints and the Tyson, Olave, Kellen Moore of it all could make me look stupid here for sure. I think that they're going to regress as an offense from what they were from Tyler Shuck's first start to the end of the season. I think they're going to go back to kind of being a bottom 10 offense personally.
Hey, so if you're watching at home right now, when I talked about Saquon Barkley, obviously there was a little Cowboys fan tax. With Travis Etienne, for you, there is a little bit of Bucks fan tax.
But that being said, I've loved Travis Etienne for as long as he's been in the league.
But you hate the Saints. Like, I hate the Eagles. It's
not
fine.
That I hate the Saints. I just, my expectation of the Saints seems to be different from other people's.
Yeah, like full transparency. So this division obviously is the most divisive in the NFL.
Anyone's live to win this division.
But that's what I mean. I'm just saying for the people at home, like, this is by far the most divisive division in the NFL. I don't even think it's close. Like, yeah, sure, you want to argue, oh, the Cowboys or Eagles win the NFC East. Oh, which of the three NFC West teams wins it? It's like, no. Anybody in the NFC South can finish last or finish first.
Like, yeah. I don't think the Bucs can finish third or fourth. I think they could finish second as their floor. Maybe third. I don't think they would finish last in the division, personally.
What if Tua Tagovailoa pulls a Kirko chains on Thursday Night Football?
Maybe. I mean, we're alive to do that every year, too. Etienne, again, maybe I'm being a little harsh on him. I should have him RB20 instead of 24 or whatever. I think it's a little low with his price tag of 29.5 ADP. That's ridiculously high to me.
Especially off the fact he goes above Kyren and Javonte, I would agree with that aspect.
You are the only one who has him ranked at ADP on the site for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean,
Mason and Davis have one spot
below me.
But like, for the most part, there's not one person on the site higher than his ADP.
Fair. Again, like, I think 29.5, I would agree, is a little high if you have to take him in the early third round, but I think mid, you know, once you hit 306 to 312, I'm totally fine taking him.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Again, let's keep going here.
Oh, yeah.
Into the next tier of running backs. For us, that is DeAndre Swift, Josh Jacobs, tentatively because of the legal situation. I would have Josh Jacobs, for what it's worth, in the tier with Henry and Walker if he were no legal concerns whatsoever. That's where he would be. I would have him ahead of Jeremiah Love personally.
I wouldn't, but he would be somewhere between where Jeremiah Love is and where Breece Hall Javonte is. So like between 14, 15 for me.
Yeah. And then we have Scadaboo, Tootin, and Price. So let's start with Swift, because I think we're probably some of the more aggressive Swift rankers.
Who would have thought after last year, by the way?
I'm the highest on the site on DeAndre Swift. Zach, it's a pretty wide dichotomy between where Swift is ranked for some experts versus others. I'm high, almost 10 spots higher on ADP than DeAndre Swift, than Zach is like 20 or 18 spots lower.
Do one thing. Also, add player. Search Kyle Manunga, because I'm curious if Zach's just incredibly high on Manunga. That's the
difference there. He's pretty high on Manunga. I'm pretty high on Manunga, too, for what it's worth, high on Swift.
Zach doesn't really have Manunga that high then, so maybe he's just lower on the Bears then. Who knows? Yeah, but regardless. So
let's go with DeAndre Swift here. DeAndre Swift, in my 2020 2026 projections. I broke this down on Sunday's video, why I'm high on DeAndre Swift. And mainly the reason for that is because of Ben Johnson's rushing scheme. The Chicago Bears and ESPN offensive line ranking are number three in the NFL right now. And DeAndre Swift really bounced back his efficiency from 2024 to 2025. He was, 4.9 yards per carry running back last year. And in 2024, it was a 3.8 yards per carry running back. So whenever he's been healthy, and which is always, like, people give him this stigma of never staying healthy. That was more of an early in his career problem than it has been lately. He's 16 games the last 3 years. Top 24 running back every year. Every year he's been a top 24 running back. I feel comfortable in the devil I know in DeAndre Swift. I think this is a team with a 9.5 over-under win total right now that could win 12 games again, like they won last year. And Caleb Williams, I think, is live to be an MVP candidate. I think that this whole offense in general has great complementary pieces. As much as there's an argument between Loveland, Odunze, and Burden, all three of their skill sets complement each other very well. And the one guy I know, other than Caleb Williams at quarterback, that I know his role is DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, because obviously we already know inherently Manunga is going to eat some of the work between the tackles, probably some goal line carries like we saw last year. But even with all that happened, he finished as the RB17, and he goes off the board as the RB22. So it's like we saw what it looks like when a Manunga eats into his workload, and he's five spots cheaper than what he finished. What if, like you said, Caleb does take a huge step, is the MVP of the league? This offense leads the league in scoring. DeAndre Swift's going to be brought up there. 10 touchdowns
if that happens.
Like, that's what I mean. DeAndre Swift was brought up in that capacity. So this has been a guy that I've kind of had a love-hate relationship. When he came into the NFL, I loved him. Oh, my God, he came to Detroit. I was so excited about DeAndre Swift. Then he didn't really take much of a step in terms of his overall vision between the tackles. He obviously had some frustrating, you know, after contact type of stuff that was going on where we were anti-DeAndre Swift. But now it's like, okay, like you said, devil I know. I'm getting a guy that was 17 last year, projecting potentially an even better offense that goes five spots later.
So this is a hot take, obviously, but I have him projected for more PPR points per game, just raw fantasy points per game, than both of the Bears receivers. And it's not because I don't like Odunze or Burden. It's because I think they eat into each other and they hurt each other to some degree. Whereas Manunga, I have for 8.64 fantasy points per game. That's like low-end RB, mid-RB3 territory without a DeAndre Swift injury. And obviously the inherent upside if Swift were to go down.
It's like Montgomery.
Yeah, he's like the new David Montgomery, ironically playing for Ben Johnson. So DeAndre Swift to me is just such an easy projection. And that's why I think he's a very comfortable pick in the early 50s.
Yeah, I'm on board too. I'm usually the guy that's like, ew, DeAndre Swift, worthless. But he's grown on me. He's definitely grown on me. Maybe I'm maturing for once.
Yeah, maybe we're boomers officially now. Jacobs, we talked about already. Again, you can look at Jacobs' career, and he's been a top 10 running back in fantasy in every season but two of his NFL career. Like, this is the model of consistency from a workload standpoint, carrying the football as much as he's carried it every year other than really last year, surpassing what the 300 carry pace type of numbers. And of course, in 2022 is the massive season, the 1,600-yard season, which, generally speaking, he probably doesn't have left in the tank, but this dude scored 13 touchdowns in 15 games on the ground last year, one through the air as well, 14 total touchdowns. And I like the Packers to be a pretty good team. I don't think they're going to be a top five offense, but I think they can be a top 12 to 15 offense pretty easily because Mike LaFleur, what is he, like the all-time winningest NFL coach or something like that? Like, they win games. Yeah. They score points, they win games. I like the complement of receivers that they have. I think Watson can stretch the field, opening up the box for Josh Jacobs. Matthew Golden runs a 4.2. He can open up the box for Josh Jacobs. Tucker Kraft is as good and athletic of a tight end as there is in football right now. And Jaden Reed didn't play pretty much all year last year. So this is a good team. As long as Jacobs is not in legal trouble, like, he's not going to be ranked at 38.2 in ADP. He was going off the board at the late second round before this happened.
Well, you mentioned it, but I mean, Tucker Kraft's arguably the best run blocking tight end in the league. Like, we know what Josh Jacobs is. Now, obviously, is he going to be exactly what he has been, or is he going to be, even if he's healthy, 90% or 85% of what he has been? Because you bake in the carry workloads, you bake in maybe the efficiency drops off. We kind of saw a little bit of that happen last year. Like, you could point to some factors that even if he is fully healthy, you're probably not going to be getting the last couple years Josh Jacobs in terms of peak performance. But at the same time, even if he does downtick a little bit, like, he's been RB10 and RB8 the last 2 years. Say he's 85 to 90% of that, and he's the RB15 in fantasy. If you can currently get him off the board in best ball drafts as the RB18, obviously legal issues definitely going to take an effect. If you don't want to take him because you don't want to inherit any risk, for sure, go ahead. But in my best ball teams, I've been taking him in the fourth round and feeling comfortable.
Yeah, again, it's all really about risk mitigation at that point, because what's the worst that could happen to Josh Jacobs right now? The worst that could happen? He gets suspended 6 to 8 games? That's the worst that can happen?
Well, it's very similar to like the Judkin stuff from last year, I feel like.
Yeah, except this is a multi-time RB1 finisher who we obviously...
Just in terms of the case, right? In terms of the case.
Yeah, again, we don't know exactly what the legal repercussions are. I think by training camp's start, we will, give or take.
Yeah.
We should probably have a better idea, at least. If Jacobs is out there for training camp, I think his price will recorrect itself, let's say back towards the 2-3 turn, and then... We might even get a full-on announcement like he's not going to receive, you know, punishment, or it could go the other way where we get a video drop or something, then shit happens and hits the fan, and that's obviously bad news for everybody involved. So, Jacobs, we're kind of ranking by hedging ourselves a little bit where we're putting him right now.
Yeah. If he's healthy, we like the offense. I mean, you mentioned the Packers top 12 to 15 units or units, sorry. In Vegas projections, they're actually at number 9 right now. So they are sandwiched right between the Seahawks, the Bears, and the Chiefs. So,
yeah. So like this is a very, very capable offense of scoring points. And that was evident last year. Josh Jacobs, 1.3 inside the 5 carries per game. It's pretty easy to score 14 times when you're getting that much volume over the course of a season. So Jacobs, again, he would be higher if we didn't have the legal issues. He'll be lower if they become a bigger issue. So Cam Scataboo, this is one that's very intriguing. Obviously, from the medical perspective, I want to say both Judkins and Scataboo, me and James Ferretti talked about on Friday. So if you guys want to see the actual medical injury stuff, we're not going to rehash that here. But the TLDR version is that he wasn't overly concerned about either of their injuries, but Scataboo's was slightly more concerning than Judkins, just for what it's worth, given that he also, I believe, was it a bone that he broke in his foot in addition to the tibia fracture and the dislocated ankle?
He underwent tightrope too, which is always really a concern, because if he underwent tightrope, like the...
A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us. Using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog, we'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start-sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit.
Last heavy reminder I have of that Tony is Cooper Kupp and Tony Pollard that had tightrope surgery.
Yeah. The timeline for this injury is 6 to 9 months. If he's out there for training camp, which he's already kind of out there right now for OTAs and mini camps, he should be fine to start week one. So, and think about the difference in how they're talking about Scataboo versus how they're talking about Neighbors. It's a big difference in the same coaching staff. So
very true.
Cam Scataboo was pacing to be one of the single best league winning running backs in fantasy last year, 16 points per game in the 8 games that he played. The last, 5 games that he played before the injury. He obviously left early against the Eagles. The second game that they played, the first time he played, the Eagles scored 31 PPR points. Really since the Kansas City game, I would say, is when he started to get his full workload. Dallas game, like, we're talking about a legit RB1 in fantasy had he stayed healthy for the rest of the season. Again, keep in mind, this was without Malik Nabers on the field for a lot of these games. Jackson Dart was a rookie quarterback. They brought in a couple other receivers. Like, I'm not super optimistic that the John Harbaugh experience is going to be like an 11-win football team, but I am super optimistic that the John Harbaugh experience is going to result in a lot of carry volume for Cam Scataboo.
Yeah, so I have him exactly aligned with ADP, because obviously you kind of, painted the rosy picture. Like, if it works out, if he's fully healthy, if he operates day one, we've literally seen him be a top 10 running back in points per game. The cons that I would have with the Scataboo profile, why I'm a little bit worried, obviously the tightrope is going to be slight concern, even though, again, I feel a lot more comfortable now after the conversation that you had with Dr. James. At the same time, mentally, it buries in a little bit, like just a little bit of a factor for me. If I viewed him maybe as worth the 36th to 38th overall pick without the surgery, I think 43 to 45 ADP is probably fair baking that in. The concerns I have in terms of the overall offense, you guys have heard my thoughts on what I think the Titans can be, what I think Cam Ward can be, what I think Brian Daboll can lead the Titans offense ultimately looking like. And I think losing that on offense with the Giants is going to be a factor. We've seen Matt Nagy run his show before, hasn't really looked good outside of when he's operating with Andy Reid. On top of that, like you said, this is a new coaching staff. Scataboo should be the lead back, should be the bell cow running back. But what if they like Tyrone Tracy? What if we see Tyrone Tracy take more of a split this year than what he saw when Scataboo got into his full groove with Daboll and the old coaching staff? So because we do have a few different concerns, again, I bake that in. I still have him aligned with ADP. If he didn't have those concerns, he would probably be the RB 13, 14, 15 area next to Javonte, Kyren for me.
Yeah, I think this is my favorite comp of the comps list that's popping
Fournette,
here.
I like that.
Second year Leonard Fournette at age 23 had 15 fantasy points per game, a little bit less than Cam Scataboo. Yep. The Jaguars in 2019 weren't a very good team. I don't believe they had like Nick Foles as their starting quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. And Leonard Fournette had 17 fantasy points per game. That's what it will look like if it goes well for Cam Scottaboo, like you said. If it goes poorly for Scottaboo, it's the Tony Pollard season where he averages 3.7 yards per carry, 13 fantasy points a game. Maybe Tracy's more involved than we're thinking he's involved, something like that. That's how it goes poorly for Scottaboo. But the injury is less concerning, I think, than a lot of people are going to bake into it. But it does concern me for his efficiency, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely on the same page here. He's obviously funny because he is a young running back, because we talked about this tier being the steady Eddies and the young running backs. He's a young running back who last year was a steady Eddie. So if he's fully healthy, he kind of fits both those pictures. The next guys we're going to be talking about are just the pure projections.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Scottaboo and Judkins both, who's not actually in this tier for you, are my first two guys in this tier because they're the steady Eddies that I know they can command a full workload because they did it last season as rookies. And generally, we think rookies to second year, you usually take a step forward in that regard. But like you said, I cannot argue that Scottaboo and Judkins have higher ceilings than Tootin and Henderson because Tootin and Henderson play for the Jaguars and Patriots respectively. And the Jaguars rushing scheme just churned out a top 10 season from Travis Etienne, turned Bucky Irving, a fourth round running back, into the biggest league winner in 2024, or one of the biggest league winners in 2024. And as of this recording, Chris Rodriguez, the other back who could command volume in this backfield, who's replacing kind of the power back vibe of whether it was Tank Bigsby or Etienne or whoever they had it in mind for last year, he's dealing with a injury and he's recovering from surgery and all that kind of stuff. So Bashaul Tootin, you could paint the rosy picture. I'll bring forth the concerns.
2026, search by the rankings. Look at me and look at everybody else. This is a guy that I'm all in on. 44th overall player. And I don't think that's going to end up being where he is. Because if we keep hearing these rosy reports in the offseason, I think this guy could end up being a 3-4 turn pick. Ultimately, you got a guy with the requisite size, with the requisite speed, by the way, 4.32 at the NFL Combine, who was, you know, painted as a projection. Basically, when this new regime came in, when Cone came in, when Gladstone came in, one of their initial pitches was quite literally how well Tootin fits their vision of what they the offense they want it to be. Last year, we saw Travis Etienne be a bell cow running back and be let go in free agency. They could have brought him back. They could have re-signed him. They had the money to be able to do that. What did they do, Corey?
They brought in Chris Rodriguez, who was probably the worst starting running back in the NFL last year for the Commanders. Reportedly, they also tried to bring in J.K. Dobbins, was something that came out yesterday. They didn't draft anybody. All they brought in was Chris Rodriguez.
All they brought in was Chris Rodriguez, who's historically been a Jag, who, funny enough, obviously now he is now on the Jags, but Jag as in just a guy. He has never been an above average or even average starting running back in this league. He was a fine contributor to the Washington backfield last year. That is about it for Chris Rodriguez. With Bashaul Tootin, you're getting explosive ability. You're getting three down upside. Again, keep in mind, his final year in college, Corey, his receiving metrics were out of the wazoo. He was one of our favorite sleepers going into that draft. And then when he landed with the Jaguars, what was our reaction, Corey?
Our reaction was, oh, perfect. This year's Bucky Irving or whatever. Like,
so I just think we got prolonged one more year. They wanted to give Etienne the respect. Obviously, he had the relationship with Trevor. They didn't bring him back. Their only back they brought in realistically with a substantial potential role is Chris Rodriguez, who has missed all of camp. And what has Bashaul Tootin done in that camp since then?
He's received rave reviews from the beat reporters, from the coaching staff. He's taken a step. That's what you want to hear. And if we keep hearing that, like you said, his ADP is already up four spots in the last 7 days from, you know, the early 60s, I believe, is where it kind of opened in best ball mania drafts. And now we're talking about you got to draft this guy in round five. You might have to draft him in round three by the time we get to September.
Yeah, basically when I'm looking at the entire situation, if I think Chris Rodriguez is a marginal talent, if I truly believe Liam Cone is one of the top five play callers on planet Earth right now, and I think Trevor Lawrence can be a legitimate MVP candidate, I want the guy that can profile up to 15 to 20 touches per game on that offense.
Yeah, it's all about risk tolerance with Tootin because it's undeniably one of the most risky bets in this territory because his rookie season comps are bad. Like Miles Gaskin and Jay Ajayi, that's the ceiling. The rest of these are like Benson and Wendell Smallwood and guys like just not good running backs in the NFL. So if you believe in the scheme, the offense, the coach, the player, you should be all in on him. I do believe in everything there. I want to bake in like maybe more a higher range, a wider range of outcomes maybe than, or the likelihood that he reaches his ceiling a little bit more. And I'm actually pretty high on him relative to everyone on the site too.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair perspective. Again, I am all in, so that's why I'm aggressive with my ranking. But at the same time, you don't have to rank him at 44. He goes at 55 on Underdog, where all the sloppies exist like me. Usually yeah. in your home league draft, you might be getting him closer to pick 70 off the board. And this is a guy that legitimately has top eight running back upside. If you guys want to know how in I am on Bashaul Tuten, I've put my money where my mouth is. He's my second highest rostered running back. I have 30% Bashaul Tuten already in the drafts that I'm in. And that's constantly been at pick 55, pick 60, pick 65 in terms of those drafts.
Yeah, so you have put your money where your mouth is. I'm actually kind of curious where mine is. And, you know, I might as well show it off while we're talking about it. We'll share this tab instead on our Best Ball Portfolio Manager, which you guys can get with the Best Ball tools, roster construction, stacking, everything. If you guys are doing Underdog drafts, this is the absolute best tool out there. And not only is it the best tool, it's by far the cheapest tool out there for you to have overlays doing your drafts. You can input our rankings directly. When you're done your drafts, you can see stack ownership. You can see creator-specific rankings of your team. If you sort by my rankings, it'll give you your uniqueness score, your ADP score, et cetera, et cetera. And as you made mention to Bashaul Tuten, let's see how where he's at in my rankings. I have only drafted him 3.6% of the time. So I need to get my roster ship up a little bit. But I think part of that is because I've been drafting a lot of Cam Scataboo and Judkins and some of the other running backs going around his territory. But that's why you have a tool like this, is I can see plain as day that I need to get my exposure up because we have access to that. So if you want to check that out, that'll be linked down below in the description. Let's keep going. Jadarian Price, obviously the other rookie Notre Dame running back. If you check boxes the way that we were doing for Javonte Williams, pretty easy to get high on Jadarian Price. Charbonnet, based on my conversation with Dr. James Ferretti, would be lucky to be on the field by week 11. Lucky. That's like the earliest point he can be back on the field is week 11, essentially. He's going to start the season on the pup. Based on our conversation, James made it seem more likely than not that he could miss the entire season. So if that happens, let's say he's off the field for 12 games, 13 games, whatever. Emmanuel Wilson and George Halani are the backfield competition for Jadarian Price, who was a first-round pick to the defending Super Bowl champions, who have a different offensive coordinator now. So I think the worry here, too, is, oh, Kenneth Walker, he was screwed all of last season by Clint Kubiak. It's a different offensive coordinator. Also, too, I've mentioned this point before in Dynasty Cycle talk for rookie drafts. Kenneth Walker is an unreliable in-between-the-tackles runner. He's a boomer-bust, feast-or-famine guy. Jadarian Price is not like that. He's a very consistent
runner.
Very
decisive.
Very decisive, knows what he's doing. Even though he wasn't the starter at Notre Dame, when you watch a tape on him, you could see the vision, the decisiveness, the ability to set up his block. So that kind of shoots against the Kenneth Walker comparison as well.
Yeah, Corey, when we went through the prospect cycle and we watched Jadarian Price's film, our first take on it is, how is this guy's intangible so high for a guy that hasn't gotten the football? He just understood the flow of offense. He understood the pacing, how to set up his blocks, how to hit his cutbacks. He always made the right decision. Obviously, a bull through contact. Like, I do think with him and with Bashaul Tuten, these are the ultimate upside swings we look for in the 50s. We talk about, oh, what's a dead zone versus a bet zone profile? Jadarian Price and Bashaul Tuten are easily the bet zone profiles. And now it's funny because I'm seeing in the last 7 days, his ADP has gone down 0.7. People are looking at this George Halani report saying, oh, George Halani is the starting running back in OTAs. Yeah, and BC Johnson was the wide receiver too for the Vikings in Justin Jefferson's rookie season. People are using that as a negative on Jadarian Price. I view it as a positive. If George Halani is beating out Emmanuel Wilson, that's way more bullish for Jadarian Price, in my opinion, because George Halani is a specialist running back.
Yeah, and it means Emmanuel Wilson's less of a threat, because Emmanuel Wilson and his Packers tenure has actually been decent. Like, he's been good enough to at least be as big of a threat as Chris Rodriguez is, for example, to Bashaul Tuten. So it wouldn't have shocked me, like, if we fast forward a calendar year from now and Emmanuel Wilson and Jadarian Price split carries for half the year. Like, it wouldn't shock me. I wouldn't expect it because he spent a first round pick on the guy, but it wouldn't shock me because I think Wilson's a good enough player.
But if Halani's already beating out Emmanuel Wilson and we go into week one, it's like Halani's the number two and Price is the number one, and you got 15%+ of Jadarian Price in the 50s, you're feeling very good. Now, my ownership isn't quite what it was at Tuten. Tuten I had at 30%, but Price still healthy 15% rostered on my teams.
Yeah, and I believe he's a lot higher for me than I had for Tuten. Yeah, I have him 9.1% of my team, so I'm a little bit higher on Price. His price was... pun intended, his price is cheaper than Tuten, so it's a little easier to get him at times. And he did slide more, it felt like, in drafts, where every draft had a Tuten slappy in it, and you get to reach above ADP to actually get him.
Hey, maybe just Tootin is Southwest Jadarian Price, and Price is just Northwest Bashal Tootin.
Yeah, there you go. Let's keep it rolling here. We'll go in depth on the guys that both of us have inside our top 24. And then I believe, is it Montgomery, Irving, and Pollard that are outside our top 24s respectively each?
So let me take a look.
At I have my Montgomery rank. Inside mine, but I think he's outside yours.
I think he's on my RB24 on the dot, if I'm not mistaken. Let me take a look at my rankings. Go sort by Danny. Boom. Running backs. Okay. So I have RB. Oh, no, that's Dynasty. My apologies. Let me go to 2026. Here, we'll just cut this part.
Price is my 25. Sorry, my 23. ETN, my 24. And then I have Montgomery, 25. Bucky, 26. And Pollard, 27. So we don't really have to go in depth on those guys.
Okay, so I got it right up. Henderson, 23. Montgomery, 24. Judkins, 25. Warren, 26. Tony Pollard, 27. Bucky Irving, 28 for me.
Okay, so Henderson and Judkins for sure are going to be guys that we need to kind of talk about as clear top 24s for both of us. If you go to Trevion Henderson again, the heuristics bros that we used to be, or we still definitely are to some degree, would have just said, hey, rookie year to second year running back, wheels up, dude. Let's draft this guy at the 3-4 turn. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we were at times. Trevion Henderson was a very solid prospect, is a very, you know, efficient running back. Like, there was a stretch of time where this guy felt like seemingly he was ripping off a 50-yard touchdown every week.
I thought he'd be a top 24 pick in redraft. I thought he would be a top 24 pick in redraft when he started exploding on the scene. You remember when we were doing like the way too early mocks, when we're going into the playoff best ball, we were talking about, is this guy going to be a top 24 pick in redraft going into next year? We learned that Ramondre Stevenson ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. I guess the question that everyone has to ask themselves is Trevion Henderson undeniably better than Ramondre Stevenson in 70% of playing running backs to the tune of him getting a 60 to 70% opportunity share? Because if you told me crystal ball, he has a 67% opportunity share this year, I would draft him in the third round because easily. I think the Patriots are going to be really solid on offense. They have AJ Brown, Romeo Doubs, both of which are upgrades from what they had last year at receiver one and receiver two. And also too, Trevion Henderson takes a step forward potentially as a player, already does the stuff that he does. He didn't really have much of a receiving workload at all. Like 42 targets is fine for Trevion Henderson, but going into the regular season, people thought this could have been a 100-target running back. He has that kind of receiving skill set. So I am very optimistic on Henderson, more so than I thought I would be, to be honest, because I really thought that I would be really low on him, given I thought his price would be like 31 overall. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm actually impressed with the redraft market's kind of pessimism to some degree to not push him up too high.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you. Realistically, I think the best comp would be if it does work out, maybe we're looking at year three to year four Tony Pollard, where it's like he went from like a 10.5 to 12.5 point per game type of guy, gets, you know, 12 and a half carries and 4.5 targets per game, and he gets up to 15.5 points per game.
Like, that's not a huge jump in workload, Dan.
I don't think
that's
it
only
is.
Only a 4-touch per game increase.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think that would be the bull case. And obviously, like, you get a 15.5 points per game from Trevion Henderson at his current price, you're looking at a league winner.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. Like, Mike Vrabel's an old-school coach. Rookies got to pay their dues. Yep. Ramondre Stevenson's still a fumble machine. Ramondre Stevenson's like 27, 28 years old at this point. Like,
I will say though, like, he was running the ball extremely well. Obviously, he had some fumble concerns, but like, if Ramondre Stevenson looked like complete dust, I would have Henderson so much higher than I do. But I'm factoring in that Ramondre Stevenson legitimately looked good, and Vrabel seems like one of those coaches that likes a big back and a small back.
He does, yeah. And it's Josh McDaniels is the play caller too, and we know for a long time, when you and I started playing fantasy into when we started making content, the rule was don't trust a Patriots running back. Like, that was the rule because of Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick and the way that they operate. And I don't think Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels are any different. So my thing here, though, is if you think about Josh McDaniels and you go, okay, when was the last time he used a workhorse running back? It was 2022. Josh Jacobs was a pretty damn good running back for him. So
yeah.
It's not like he's opposed to using a guy as a starting running back, clear-cut bell cow, when he's proven he's the best guy on the team, no questions asked. So if I don't think it's outside the range of outcomes where Henderson takes a step forward, Stevenson takes a step backwards. And if that happens, Henderson could very easily be a top 15 back this year.
Yeah, I think the upside is clearly there. Obviously, I was the more pro-Henderson guy compared to us, but at the same time, like, I'm kind of like baking in more of the realism now versus where I want to rank them.
Right next to each other for what it's worth in terms of where we have them ranked.
But that's what I mean. It's like usually for this type of player, I would have him ranked at 38 overall and you would have him ranked at 61. So the fact that we're kind of like just in lockstep here is pretty hilarious.
Can I, like, so you said the ceiling could be like a Tony Pollard, like
15 and a half points per game, 2023 Pollard. Yeah.
Is year two Devon Achane outside of the range of outcomes for him?
I just think Achane just looks so much better as a runner in year one.
I mean, people call this guy the next Jahmyr Gibbs, man.
Yeah. The thing is, again, I've been very optimistic on Henderson, but objectively speaking, there were vision concerns.
There's a reason Ohio State brought in Judkins as a transfer. There's a reason that he couldn't hold up to the workload early on in his college career. I do think he's the type of running back that will never exceed like 300 touches in a season. Yeah.
And honestly, I think based off year one, I know kind of goes back. Like, I think his ceiling is still a little bit higher than this, but is he more DeAndre Swift than he is those guys? Like, is the vision concerns always going to be there? Well, that's what I mean. Like, are the vision concerns always going to be there, or is the game going to slow down for him this year and he takes that next step? That's going to be the biggest determining point. But ultimately, if you told me the range of outcomes for Henderson was like DeAndre Swift to Tony Pollard in that aspect, or like you said, I don't think it's going to be Devon Achane or Jahmyr Gibbs, but maybe it's somewhere between that range and, you know, the Gibbs or in the Swift Pollard range. I think that would make sense.
I think he's a better in best ball guy too, for what it's worth.
I agree.
Because Stevenson will be a pest from a standard redraft standpoint. I've been talking with my wallet. I have more Henderson than Price and Tootin. So I've been speaking with my shares here. So he's just interesting. That's all I'm going to say, is because especially at 50 overall or whatever, like, I pick at first overall in my home league. If I can start my draft with Gibbs, let's say Derrick Henry, Chase Brown, some other running back is my second pick, and then I take receiver with my next two picks at 301 and 412, taking Trevion Henderson as my flex at 501 feels really nice. It feels like I'm free rolling whatever upside that he has, because then I can backfill safer players after Henderson.
Yeah, ultimately, I hope you pick first or second overall in your leagues this year, guys.
Yeah, pretty much. Other Ohio State running back, Quinshon Judkins, much more proven ball carrier, at least, than Henderson down the stretch from week three, really, when he started getting the full allotment of snaps, all the way down to, like, what injury game was it? Week later on in the season, he started tapering off a little bit.
He was a nightmare to roster.
Yeah, he was a nightmare to roster. But that like week 3 to 17 or to 13 standpoint, we're looking at basically like a 15, 18 per game carry running back, even though the Cleveland Browns suck, even though they sucked last year. Judkins didn't suck. When you watch the tape on Judkins and you look at how well he was playing, if he was on a different team, like if he was the Seahawks starting running back right now, I'd take him at the 301.
Yeah, and ultimately, that is why I have him at 60 overall, is I don't believe in the Browns' offense, and I think realistically losing Stefanski is going to have its impact. Not having a quarterback is going to have its impact, and he was already a guy that was pretty much a zero in the passing game. Obviously, he was getting the snaps, but realistically, in terms of the receiving yards per game, the actual targets commanded wasn't really there, and this is a team that added two pass catchers in the first two rounds.
Yeah, and I prefer both of these guys to Tootin, and it's only just because they were better prospects, and I thought they were better as rookies. That's the only reason why, because if either of them were on Jacksonville, I would prefer them to...
They'd probably be top 10 running backs for you in the rankings if they're
exactly
on Jacksonville.
Yeah, like, I just think that Tootin is an inferior player to these two guys, and Price also, for what it's worth, because I don't know what Price is capable of doing in the NFL yet. So my tier is like Scataboo 19, Judkins 20, Henderson 21, and then I have like the Tootin, Price, ETN, so on after that, because I do like these, like, devil I know in their prime 22, 23 year old guys.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The devil I know that is not 22 or 23 years old is next here with David Montgomery. He is the ultimate dead zone profile of the past. But also, what if he's this year's Javonte Williams? What if he's this year's Josh Jacobs? This is a big physical back on a team that wants to run the football. Every report coming out of Houston right now is they view him as their full-fledged three-down running back. And yeah, we are projecting Houston to be one of the worst offenses in the league. Again, I'm not going to say they're bottom three, but they're definitely in that like bottom 10 range based off what they showed last year. What if CJ Stroud does bounce back? What if year two with Nick Caley looks a lot more rosy, and all of a sudden you're getting a guy that gets 15 carries, three targets per game, and punches in 0.8 touchdowns per game with Houston?
Danny, would it shock you to know that the Houston Texans scored the 13th most points in the league last year?
That is a shocker. That is a shocker.
That's why I like David Montgomery, man. They didn't. They could not run the ball last year, and they scored the 13th most points in the league. They had two rookie receivers out there, and Nico Collins, I wouldn't say had the best season of his career either. Like, I said this to you before we started recording. I will take David Montgomery over Travis Etienne and sleep like a baby doing so, because I have just as many concerns about Etienne being the player in 2024 that he was, you know, in the other times of his career. Talent-wise, I have the same amount of concerns for both players. Workload-wise, I do not. I know David Montgomery is getting the majority of the work. I don't think Woody Marks is anything more than a scat back. I think that David Montgomery is going to command a 300-carry workload for a team that might be leading in most of their games because they have probably the best defense in football.
Yeah, you know why we have a reference point for this?
Joe Mixon 2024, where I was dead wrong on. I was dead wrong on Joe Mixon. I don't want to make that mistake again.
Yeah, and Joe Mixon was quite literally at one point the RB3 in fantasy that year.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me, Danny, if in week 8, my running back tier list is David Montgomery inside my top 10 running backs.
I'm right there with you, and he's been like a guy, especially, I don't know if I took him on a big dog, but I know I've taken him on multiple BBMs. If you have a lot of upside, a lot of risk in your early floor picks, like let's just say hypothetically, I take at third overall, Jamar Chase. At the end of the second round, I took a swing on a guy like Jeremiah Love. If I can add Dave Montgomery as my RB2 or my RB3 in that instance, RB2 if I start strong at receiver, RB3 if I get another running back in that stretch, I think a David Montgomery type is like your eat the vegetables pick next to the elite upside rookie like a Jeremiah Love is. Hell, if you want to go on a 4-5 turn, say, hey, you know what? I haven't taken a running back yet. I'm going to double tap David Montgomery and Bashaul Tutin. David Montgomery, Jadarian Price, David Montgomery, Cam Scadaboo. I think David Montgomery is just the ultimate sexless, but also kind of sexy pick.
Yeah, and the downside risk is that he's 29 years old. He's switching teams, all that kind of stuff. It's just that, like, he had a good excuse. He had a good excuse for not being on the field more. Jahmyr Gibbs might be the best running back in football, legitimately. So it makes sense why he's not on the field more. He can average 4.5 yards per carry like he did last. It's not like he's coming off a season in which he averaged 3.6 yards per carry.
Exactly. Like, he was efficient last year. Obviously, Houston's offensive line is not what the Detroit Lions is, but
the Lions' offensive line run blocking wasn't excellent last year.
And they just took a first-round interior offensive lineman with Keelon Rutledge.
Yeah, I just think David Montgomery is everything that you want out of Travis Etienne for 2.5 rounds cheaper.
Yeah, that could
be. Or two rounds cheaper, I suppose. These other guys didn't really make the cut for both of us, so we'll just quickly rattle them off. I'll go on Irving and Pollard if you want to go on Warren. Bucky Irving, the more checkpoints he hits for his shoulder, the more I'll move him up. Because I have moved him up a couple of spots since OTAs and minicamps because he has been on the field. However, Gainwell's still there, who I'm concerned about. Sean Tucker is still there, who I'm concerned about. All that being said, a healthy Bucky Irving will be the starting running back of this team. Will have a 60 to 70% opportunity share because that's what he was doing last year when he was on the field. You see 20.8 opportunities per game last year from Bucky Irving. Now, he didn't hold up to that, so that's a separate issue. But even despite an injury-riddled season, they were giving him a huge workload. So I can't get too low on Irving because I understand that the ceiling is quite high for him. This is a player that many people were comfortable taking inside the early to mid second round last year. Zach took him over Devon Achane in the Flock League, and I don't even think that was an outrageous opinion to do so. I want to see more checkpoints with the health. Come training camp, I'm not going to draft any of Bucky Irving in best ball until training camp. Once training camp hits, I will pay the premium I have to pay on him.
Yeah, if it's very bullish, I will. I've been very bearish on Bucky Irving. And the reason being, I think Gainwell's a dude, man. You guys give him 2 years, $14 million. He's gotten all the time with the starters and OTAs and training camp so far because Bucky really realistically hasn't been ready. And Gainwell's the type of guy that really earns a coach's trust. He can pass block. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. You know he's going to make the right decision between the tackles. We saw he was literally, a 17-point-per-game running back week 10 on last year with the Steelers. Yeah. Obviously, different situation now. But, man, I just feel like he's the type of running back that you don't phase out of the backfield. And I think he has far more of a chance of making it a 60-40, 55-45, maybe even a 50-50 than anything the Bucs have had in the backfield, including Rashad White in the past.
Yeah, that's, I guess, The ceiling is where I disagree, because I think Irving, as long as he's healthy, is going to be the guy. They talk about him that way. Tucker's going to be annoying. He's going to have four or five rushing touchdowns that we think should have gone to Bucky Irving. And Gainwell is going to be a significant factor on third down, and that's going to impact Bucky Irving's ceiling. I don't think he has top five upside, even if he stays healthy, because of all those factors. I think that his touchdown upside will be limited by Sean Tucker. His receiving upside will be limited by Kenneth Gainwell. But at the end of the season, could he have 1,500 total yards, 9 touchdowns, and be the RB14 in fantasy because he stayed healthy? Yeah, he can. And he can probably even finish like RB8, RB9 in fantasy, in my opinion. But Irving is very injury scary at the moment. Until we see him cleared completely for contact in training camp games, playing preseason, whatever the case is. I've been talking a little bit with my wallet on Bucky Irving because I actually have 16% of him. However, the average pick that I'm getting him at is lower than where his ADP is currently, which means that I've only really taken him when he slid a crazy amount.
I have 12% Gainwell, so I'm like, I've just been hammering the Gainwell button in the pick 100 range.
I have 6% Gainwell, and I have 17.4% Sean Tucker. So I've just been taking pieces from this backfield because I do think that the team bounces back in general.
Yeah. So speaking of ownership, another guy that I have a ton of an Underdog, my third highest rostered running back at 26.7%. I think the Steelers running back situation might be one of the league winners in the entire NFL this year. Picking the right back between Jaylen Warren or Rico Dowdle could get you a legitimate top 15 running back in fantasy. I'm leaning Warren because ultimately when I look at historically Rico Dowdle versus Jaylen Warren, Jaylen Warren's been the higher yards per out run player. Jaylen Warren's been the more efficient running back. Jaylen Warren's been in this team, in this culture, with this franchise for longer. People are going to point to the relationship between Rico Dowdle and Mike McCarthy, but ultimately with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, who do I think is more likely to get the receiving snaps? I would gear towards Jaylen Warren. Realistically, again, you prefer Rico Dowdle. He's going to be probably one of your favorite picks on the board. But because I think Jaylen Warren profiles into more of the 60, 65% guy, I think the ceiling is legitimately 15.5 points per game.
Yeah, I mean, he had a season in 2023 with 74 targets. And I believe Najee Harris was like among the league leaders in touches that year. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible that he has a big receiving workload. And like you just made reference to, Kenneth Gainwell was like a top 20 running back down the stretch. For the Steelers because of that receiving workload with Aaron Rodgers. So I don't want this to be Cam Scadaboo versus Tyrone Tracy. So I'm going to be a little bit more of a bitch with my stance on this backfield and probably take about 6-8% Warren, 5-6% Dowdle, because I do prefer Warren as well. But I'm not going to be over my skis on either of these two players because I do have concerns for the team and the running back backfield in general, where I'm like, I don't know, like, I don't disagree with you. One of them could be a top 15 running back, but I generally think that both of them will end up being RB3s for the majority of the season. And then if there's an injury, one of them could be a top 20 running back.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I think that's already basically been what's priced in. But the fact that I do think Warren could, you know, take the bulls by the horn, be that 60 to 65% guy, be that primary receiving back. Like, I ultimately just think that Kenny Gainwell was a far more bigger competition piece in the backfield last year than what Rico Dowdle will provide this year.
Yeah, definitely fair. Tony Pollard, pretty straightforward. He's actually one of only a few running backs. I think there's like four or five max that have rushed for 1,000 yards in four straight years. Like you said, Tony Pollard last year was pretty garbage at the start of the season. Like he had what, three games of top 20 production until week 14. But then down the stretch, he actually started to play well. And you could say, oh, coincidence, fluke, whatever. It did coincide with Cam Ward playing better. So maybe, if Cam Ward plays well with Carnell Tate on the outside now, Wandale Robinson in the slot now, maybe Gunnar Helms the starting tight end. We don't exactly know what to expect of this Titans offense. Conservatively, I think they will be still a bottom 10 unit in the NFL, but what if they're a league average unit? Tony Pollard, a starting running back for a league average unit, that's definitely worth the 77 overall ADP that he has. Now, that being said, my absolute highest rostered running back is Nick Singleton. And the reason for that is because Nick Singleton is an extremely high ceiling player and Pollard is 29 and Spears has never stayed healthy in his career. So part of it is contingent value upside and also the 10% chance that Singleton's just the guy that he was as a true freshman. So I'm not going to go much higher than where I'm at. And ironically, you and I are basically in the exact same spot with Sammy as the highest on the site. But I do think that he's absolutely worth like a, oh, I need, like you just said, I took Jeremiah Love at the 2-3 turn. So I need a running back early on in the season to play in my flex in case Jeremiah Love isn't startable until week four.
It's the eat your vegetables type of pick. And funny enough, I talked about this before, but sneaky underrated high scoring week 17 Steelers versus Titans. I think those teams can operate with some pace. I think both teams are going to have, you know, let's just say average to below average defenses. I really don't believe in the Steelers bouncing back this year because they looked like a below average defense last year. And obviously with the Titans outside of Jeffrey Simmons, it was a complete disaster last year. So if I'm looking at that game, like could that could be a sneaky 27-24, both those running backs at that point, who knows? Is it still going to be Pollard by then? It could be Singleton. My bet, though, is that Tony Pollard at least gets the majority of the backfield this year. So at his current cost being in the 70s, I'm willing to get that. You get 20 touches per game in the first 4 to 5 weeks, and maybe that scales back to 15 to 18 week seven on. I still think it's a much worthwhile pick.
Yeah. And again, just like you said, an eat your vegetables pick, a guy who projects to be the starting running back for the team, so on and so forth. Again, Spears, Singleton, they could factor in for sure, but generally speaking, when healthy, it's been the Tony Pollard show the last couple of years in Tennessee. So yeah, pretty straightforward. Those are our top 28 running backs for redraft leagues. Like I made reference to earlier on in the video, season pass is live right now. If you guys want to get all of our redraft rankings, 2026 draft guide from Land, Zach's first edition is already out. The projections when they come out in the next couple of weeks, the first edition of the redraft rankings manifesto will be coming out in the next couple of days as well. Make sure to get all of that. Season pass is live now, $34. It'll cover you from now until January 1st, 2027. You'll have all the redraft content you need. And it has not changed in price, despite being available for 2 months longer than it was available for last year. So definitely check that out if you guys are interested. As always, if you want, you know, Dynasty content, our FSE prospect model, Dynasty decisions, trade value charts, my team's tool, all available for annual mother flockers. And as I made reference to, taking advantage of some underdog drafts right now and getting values on certain guys is probably the best, most actionable piece of advice that we have for you immediately here. And you can do that on Underdog Fantasy using our best ball tools. You can sign up right now using our promo code FSE. You'll get a 50% deposit match. And you'll also get our draft guides once they come out. Our Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide already out, of course. And then our Redraft Rankings Manifesto going to be out soon. And our weekly start sit rankings will all be available to you for signing up on Underdog. If you're a new user, use our code FSE. Make a play on the site. Enter a puppy draft. Enter a best ball mania draft. Whatever you have to do. And then you can also get our best ball tools, our roster construction optimizer, stacking overlays, et cetera, et cetera. That is an additional 40-something bucks on top of the annual mother flocker. So if you're already an annual mother flocker, you can actually add this in for sub $50 on top of your existing membership. But if you're, you know, annual mother flocker with the best ball tool, it's 146, as you can see there. But with that being said, really appreciate all you guys tuning in. Peace out. We'll talk to you soon.